Science and Nonviolence, Chapter 2. I have been asked, will the progress of science do any good to the world? Is it desirable that science should progress in the manner it does? We should bear in mind that it is not true to say that science is progressing only in these modern times. Man has been striving after science ever since he came into being. Take, for example, wireless, which is a modern invention. We think it is a great invention which has taken science ahead. But scientific inventions greater than this had been achieved in ancient times, and it is only by basing itself on them that modern science is marching forward. Man did not know to start with how to light a fire. When this knowledge was subsequently acquired, what transformations did it bring about in the lives of men? Just imagine what would happen to you if fire is not available to you only for a few days. Men would have to go without cooked food and would shiver in cold. And how can we prepare all the medicines that require the aid of fire? There was an age before ours when people used implements and weapons made of stone. Man had no iron, and now imagine what change came about in human life when iron was discovered. If we renounce iron, children would have no penknives, tailors would have no needles, and peasants would have no ploughs and axes as well. All modern machineries are made with steel as the basic material. Formerly, men knew not how to milk the cow. They lived on the flesh of animals. It must have occurred to someone that only if we could nourish a cow with care, she would give us milk. Agriculture, animal husbandry, fire, and cotton textiles are some of the scientific achievements of olden days. Then man discovered the power of steam. And now, of course, we have reached the age of atom. The power of electricity is being long since utilized in the Western countries. In India also, we would soon witness the wonders of electricity. In the future, factories may run with the help of atomic power, and even decentralized industries may be run in the villages with its help. Science has been thus marching ahead since ancient times and should continue this pace in the future. Man's life would thereby be beautified. The more knowledge does man acquire, the better will he be able to grasp the nature of this creation. I have now a pair of spectacles. Without them, I am so helpless that I could not even see the man sitting in front of me. The utility of science is thus obvious, and no one needs doubt that science should go ahead. I am myself a great devotee of science. Science has two powers. The one is constructive, the other destructive. Science can serve and can also kill. Fire is used in the kitchen, but it can also be used to burn down a house. Science, however, has not the power of deciding between these possible uses. This power of decision rests in self-knowledge. As the bird flies with her two wings, so does man go ahead with the twin powers of science and self-knowledge. You all might be knowing that every motor vehicle has two sets of mechanisms. One of them makes it move, and the other steers it in the required direction. If one of these fails, the machine would fail to work. We walk on our feet, not with our eyes, but we see with them. Self-knowledge is comparable to our eyes, and science to our feet. Without self-knowledge, man is blind and ignorant. If one has eyes but no feet, he can only look around and has to be confined to one place. Without science, no work in this world could be done. Without self-knowledge, science cannot find the right way out. Scientists are feverishly busy at inventing destructive armaments. In spite of all their intelligence, they let themselves be purchased by money, For the sake of money, they would invent whatever they are asked to, irrespective of whether that would be beneficial or harmful for mankind. If only the scientists could take the vow never to be purchased by money and never to cooperate with the production of destructive weapons, the world could be saved. But the scientists will not be able to do this till the society at large takes up the idea. All this can be stopped when the heart of mankind cries out, when the mentality of engaging in such inventions is looked down upon. It must be realized that science will continue its progress, and that if we want it to go ahead unhampered, we must bring non-violence to its aid. This alone would be to the good of the world. The kingdom of heaven can be brought down to the earth if only science and non-violence could be united. If, however, science enters into a close alliance with violence, the world would face total annihilation. We lay stress on non-violence, for we want science to flourish, and for this purpose, non-violence is indispensable. If you want to retain violence, scientific progress should have to be stopped. With the weapons of warfare that were there in ancient times, man-to-man combats or duels took place between rivals for political power, as between Bhima and Jarasandha, for instance, in which one of them died and the other survived, but nothing happened to the world at large. If you want to have violence, fight with sticks or even with your bare hands. Why go for inventing a gun? Violence may be allowed to continue if science is kept within limits. Such violence would not be able to cause much harm. But if we want science to go ahead unimpeded, we must have non-violence along with it. What is the significance of this alliance between science and non-violence? It is this, that arms are not to be used for solving the problems that concern human relationships. Such problems should be solved peacefully. Scientists would be requested to devise surgical instruments, but not instruments for killing. The progress of science would be to our benefit if we could thus solve human problems by non-violent methods. That is why I have been repeating the truth that science and violence are opposed to each other. The two cannot coexist. Violence must be done away with if science is to survive. If both are sought to be retained, mankind and along with it science also would be destroyed. Consider Bhudan Yajna from this point of view, and a new vision would dawn upon you. We are trying through this movement to solve the problem of land that is there in the whole of Asia. If we solve this problem through violence, ill feeling amongst us would increase, and the consequence of it in our scientific age would not be welcome. If, on the other hand, we could solve this great problem by non-violent, peaceful, and loving methods, there would be increasing cooperation amongst us, and society would become stronger and happier. People ask me, why are you going around in vain? Why are you putting so much effort for this work, when all this can be done with the help of legislation? But what precisely could be achieved by legislation? Let us suppose there is a law to take over land. A peasant does not agree to surrender his land and he is put in prison. The might of law reaches so far. The might of law is nothing but the might of the rod or of the armed strength that supports law. Should we place our reliance on that strength? We should reflect over that legislation alone can bring about real good to the people, which is introduced after creating the appropriate intellectual climate amongst the people themselves. A law that is imposed on people without their cooperation defeats its own purpose and gives rise to increasing violence and bad will in society. It is true that legislation is compatible with non-violence. When people get a thing done by their own effort, public opinion is thereby created, and whatever little might have been left undone may be completed by legislation. But in this case, legislation comes in only towards the end. We should therefore understand that our effort to solve the problem of land by non-violent methods is generating a great force in this scientific age. People find it difficult to understand one issue. Why are you opposing science by advocating the cause of small industries, they ask me. They believe science to be only another name for the setting up of big machines. So they think that it cannot be consistent with small machines. It is to be understood that science is not concerned with the use of machines. The question as to what machines should or should not be used in such and such circumstances has to be decided by sociology. Science is not concerned with this issue. Heavy industry cannot thrive in a country with greater density of population and proportionately lesser employment potentiality. Japan has more men and less of land. Small crafts would be successful there. Heavy machineries are meant for countries like Russia and America that have smaller populations and more of land. Whatever machinery, big or small, be required can be produced and supplied by science. It is wrong to suppose that greater scientific skill is required for the manufacture of big machines and less for the manufacture of small ones. Consider this tiny watch. Is there less science in it? Do you find lesser ingenuity of science in the small sewing machine? Is there less of science involved in the small photographic camera? Science is utilized in big machines as well as in small ones. Which ones we require has to be decided by considering our social circumstances, and then we place orders for them with science. What have we to do if we are to save India in this scientific age? First, we have to resolve to decide all social problems by non-violence. Secondly, science should be utilized for producing instruments that would serve man and not armaments that would kill. Thirdly, the prevailing situation alone should decide whether science should be ordered to produce big machines or small ones. If we keep these in mind, we can derive immense benefit from science. Let the growth of science be steady and unimpeded. This is my desire. Pattamundai, 1st of March, 1955.